whose dark, curly hair spills out from her hood. "Tell me, and maybe I'll bring you to the dungeons instead of killing you." "Silence!" Vane raises his free hand at the female shadebaiter, like he's about to strike her. Then he turns toward me, no doubt sensing where I'm standing. "You all kill the others. I want the satisfaction of slaying this one myself." He charges toward me, swinging his blade. I stop him mid-strike with mine, metal screeching against metal as I try to push him back, my shoulders burning with the effort. "Don't worry about the others," Merity says tersely from somewhere behind me. "Lysander and I will keep them busy." Lysander darts past me, his eyes glowing green again, charging up the beach and making the other necromancers scatter as he tries to eviscerate them with his claws. Someone screams. A sword drops onto the sand, accompanied by a spray of blood. And I have a feeling someone's just learned not to point a blade at a bear.
"You're lucky he let you live this long," Vane growls.
Something tumbles from his cloak pocket as he slashes at me. I dance away from his blade, and as my mind makes sense of the tiny object on the sand, my heart lurches. Vane might as well have stabbed me when he dropped it. Master Simbri's ancient book of poems. The one with my sticky jam fingerprints on the front page and a few of my tears in the middle. There's a page still carefully held by the braided silk bookmark I gave Simbri on her birthday last year. She's really gone. She's gone, and I still need her. Just like Evander. Vane lashes out again and again, never even breaking a sweat. Without his vision, his other senses are heightened, making him more than a match for me. My forehead grows slick, my mouth cotton dry as I jump and dodge to stay a hair's breadth away from his blade. Each time our swords clash, my body screams with the staggering force of his blows. I can't keep this up much longer. The realization that Master Simbri's gone forever has made my blocks and jabs as clumsy as a beginner's. There are shades waiting beyond the shore, their skeletal bodies restless with the need to hunt. And I'm sure the only reason they aren't charging toward us is because they're waiting for Vane's order. It could come at any moment. I barely deflect his next blow, which knocks the breath out of me and shatters the vials of honey and blood on my belt. I try to scoop some of the honey into my hand, but it oozes through my fingers, and tiny shards of glass slice my skin.
"Oh, did you need those?"
Vane snarls as the vials crunch. He throws me to the ground, ramming his shoulder into my chest. I get a brief glimpse of Merity as I go down, standing mere paces away near the water's edge. Her eyes glazed in concentration as she controls her grizzly like a puppeteer. I hope she snaps out of that daze before Vane comes for her. Pain blossoms through my middle as I writhe on the sand, my sword lying just out of reach, everything hurting too much for my body to obey my commands to roll away. My neck is exposed, ready for Vane's blade to come swiftly down and cleave my head from my shoulders. He raises his sword again. I force myself to gaze into the slits of his mask, hoping I'll make Master Simbri proud by witnessing my own death, by not letting Vane win entirely, because I'm not afraid. It's exactly what Simbri must have done earlier, on this very spot. I won't disappoint her. Fury sings through my veins as I greet my coming death. His sword slices through the air, but swings wide as it flies out of his hand. Finally, I manage to draw a shuddering breath that clears my head a little. But the pain in my chest is still white hot as I roll across the sand to dodge the errant blade. Vane crashes to the ground beside me, a dagger sticking out from between his ribs. That explains his poor aim with the sword. Running over to admire her handiwork, Merity gives a satisfied nod.
"Finish him, Odessa," she growls, looking past me and raising an arm.
I follow her gaze in time to see Lysander raise that same arm, his claws slashing the face of an already wounded man. Beside me, Vane groans, drawing my attention. "I think your dagger might have done the job," I tell Merity, but she's not listening, once again focused on fighting through Lysander. Still breathing hard, I wrap my bloody, sticky hand around the hilt of the dagger in Vane's ribs and shove it in a little deeper. My stomach does a flip as his scream fills my ears, but I hold on tight to the blade in case he's less injured than he's letting on.
"Silly girl," he coughs.
Blood flecks the narrow mouth opening of his mask, like it flecked my lips the day Evander died and I nearly lost my life.
"I would have made quick work of you before the Shades cleaned up your remains. Now, you'll have to feel their every bite."
I glance toward the horizon. Sure enough, the Shades are opening their cavernous mouths and scraping their bony fingers against the hard ground, impatient to come for us when their master gives the order. Still, we can't leave yet. Not without knowing who paid these people to create more monsters the world didn't need. I can either dig this dagger in deeper and scramble your insides, or give you a swift end if you answer my questions, I whisper, not sure it's a promise I can make. His end seems to be coming swiftly, with or without my help. I rip off his mask, flinging it into the sand, wanting to study his face for lies as we talk. "Now tell me, how were you controlling these Shades?" He spits blood in my face. I wiggle the dagger just a little, and once he stops screaming, he starts talking in a ragged voice.
"Magic. I taught myself. My eyes may be weak, but there's nothing wrong with my sight. I see differently than you, so my powers are different. I thought you noticed last time we met, when I didn't have a mask in the way."
I gape at him. "So you can control Shades like a beastmaster controls an animal?" Vane nods stiffly. I make a hasty note to tell Valoria, if I ever see her again. Maybe there are others with powers we don't understand or even know about. And perhaps, like Vane, there are others who have mastered their abilities alone in the shadows. In the distance, Lysander roars. I hope he's running down the other Shadebaiters without any trouble. But Merity must be worried, as she edges away from us and draws another dagger. Still in her dreamlike state, she runs farther up the beach. "What were you planning to do?" I rip my gaze from her and quickly return my attention to Vane, as the Shades beyond the shore moan and grumble, with all those monsters. He laughs, though it's more like a splutter.
"Why should I tell you? I'm dying, and you're as good as dead. Soon."
He tilts his head in the direction of his companion's shouts farther up the beach. where the other shade baiters are trying their luck against Lysander. And suddenly, I understand. He's preventing his shades from attacking to buy his companions time to escape. Time they wouldn't have if they were still around after the monsters finished with me. Tell me what you were planning, I demand again. Even with Vane stalling on behalf of the others, it won't be long before he's gone, and we're all shade food. He shakes his head, still laughing. I punch him in the chest, just to stop the sickly sound ringing in my ears. Fine. Allow me to guess, then. First, you kidnapped dead nobles from the palace and pulled off their shrouds to turn them into shades. Then you fed people to them, like Master Nicanor, to make them stronger. Then you kidnapped His Majesty, probably to make another shade. You've been killing necromancers and creating shades, building an army from our dead. But why? Vane's breathing is ragged as he chokes out. If you're so clever, girl, you tell me. I remember the horrified faces of the villagers who survived the massacre in Elsinore. I remember their dead, marching away to an uncertain future. And it dawns on me. You were trying to make people fear the dead. By turning them into shades, you reminded the living of the danger that surrounds them at all times. But there has to be more to it than that. Vane goes suddenly still beneath me, and my heart stops for a moment. I slap his cold face so hard that the sound ripples across the lake. He's lost to a fit of bloody coughing. At last, he says, There's nothing you can do that'll make me talk. It takes a moment to find my voice again. I'm shaking so hard all over. Who is he? The man who hired you? A duke? One from the southern provinces? After all, there have been some with their eyes on King Wilding's throne for decades. Vane says nothing, but offers me a strained smirk. I grab the hilt of the dagger and drive it in deeper, eliciting more screams. Every Cardian's life depends on knowing who's really behind these attacks. Tell me his name, and I'll make the pain stop. Still, Vane doesn't answer. Due to agony, or his twisted code of morals, I can't tell. I'll find your family, or whoever, or whatever it is you love. I'll kill them. Every last one, if you don't give me the name of the man who hired you right now. It's an empty threat, but he doesn't need to know that. I must sound wild in my desperation, as he cowers slightly in the wake of my words. I do care about the living people of Cardia. Same with my partners. Vane makes a wheezing sound, struggling for breath, but continues. And I was promised a seat on his court when he takes the throne. When the living rule and decide the future. The living people of Cardia. The words remind me of something Hadrian said once, as he held me close to the beat of a drum. Hadrian, who has enough money to hire a host of men like Vane. Hadrian, who was the last person seen with King Wilding according to Merity. Hadrian, who Simeon said no one had seen for hours at the time he'd penned his letter to me. Hadrian, who I left with Her Majesty and my friends, thinking they would watch over each other. Hadrian, who is next in line for the throne. Suddenly, I see what I couldn't before. Head spinning, I drop my gaze to the sand. Vane's blood-spattered hand twitches, and beneath the grime, I notice a smattering of bruises, dark against his white knuckles.
"How did you get those marks on your hands?"
I demand. But as I expected, Vane can't or won't answer.
"You punched Prince Hadrian, didn't you? To demand more rewards when you finished his murder crusade. Is that right?"
The last time I saw him, mere days ago in the throne room, Hadrian's face was bruised just beneath his eye. Still, I want to hear Vane say it aloud. To hear Hadrian's name spoken by someone who, in his final moments, has no reason to lie.
"Death be damned! Say his name!"
But Vane is still and silent again.
I shake his shoulders.
He doesn't move. His body limp beneath my hands. He's gone. His spirit has vanished, leaving behind the shell of a mage who could have done some good with his unusual power, protecting necromancers during their travels to the Deadlands, for one. But instead, he was loyal to Hadrian to the end. And now, no longer under their master's control, his shades are free to hunt. I hurriedly grab Vane's silver mask and cloak, careful to avoid touching the part that's wet with blood. They're a reminder that Carthia's enemies can be slain, that I can slay them, even the traitorous prince who was once, perhaps, my friend. The lake becomes a blur as I sink forward in the sand beside the Shadebaiter's body. I thought Hadrian loved me. I swear I heard caring in his voice that day in the throne room. But he sent me here to have me killed, away from my friends, from help. I stagger to my feet. The world, my world, is falling apart, and I'm probably much too late to stop it. But I have to try, even if I don't know who or what to trust anymore. A shade howls in the distance, fighting with its companions as they feast on the body of the rogue necromancer who managed to flee farthest. Gazing up the beach, I realize all the other Shadebaiters are either dead or gone. I don't see Merity, but Lysandre is chomping on one of the mangled corpses without a care, meaning she must be alive and unharmed nearby. The spirits of the Deadlands haven't yet lured her to taste their fruit or wade in their lakes, though they might, and I have no honey. We need to get out of here before the Shades run out of other bones to crunch. I hurry to where Master Simbri's book is half buried in the sand. My heart soars pitifully as I tuck the leather-bound poems into my front pocket for safekeeping, as though touching the battered pages will bring me closer to Simbri. I pat the book, trying to tell my foolish heart it's of no use. A shade howls again, and another one answers with a gleeful, lilting noise. Shaking my head to clear it, I pick up my sword and call to Merity. "We need to go!" There's a gate on the lake's western shore. It won't take long to reach. Just a sprint down the beach, following the curve of the narrow stretch of sand. "Oh, good. There you are," I say shakily as Merity reappears beside me. I need her steady presence to help me focus as I lead us out of here. "Get Lysandre, hurry." But she doesn't seem to hear me, or even the Shades' hunting cries as they start to close in, bounding on all fours like hounds instead of the humans they once were. With a vacant expression, she kneels by Vane and pulls the dagger from his flesh. She brings it to her lips and licks the gooey crimson mess from the flat of the blade. "What are you doing?" I try to suppress a shudder. She glances up, her eyes still blank, and wipes her mouth with the back of her hand, smearing blood all over her face. I reach for the dagger. She holds it out of reach, snarling like a feral dog. Then I remember the effects of her magic. She was using Lysander like a puppet to hunt the other shadebaiters. And now, she's become like a beast herself. Faya only knows for how long. Lysander bounds toward me, whining softly and looking from me to the shades. They're coming toward us, swift gray shadows we can't outrun. But perhaps Lysander can. Waiting until Merity is distracted by her dagger again, I bash her on the temple. I'm doing this for her own good, I mutter to a growling Lysander. Then I throw Merity's limp form over the bear's back. This time, it's not Merity commanding him to give me a ride. I realize as he lowers himself so I can climb on behind her. He's trying to help me escape along with his master. That, or he knows he needs me to find the gate out of here. The shades spray sand everywhere as their skeletal feet hit the shore. Lysander takes off in the direction I point. Stay out of the water, I yell as I hang onto his back with one hand and steady Merity with the other, keeping Vane's cloak and mask tucked securely under one arm. The spirits in the lake are so far gone, they don't even notice our passing as we race along the shore, steps ahead of our pursuers. The water becomes a blur as Lysander pushes himself to run harder. The shade's rattling breaths ring in my ears. Without Vane's power compelling them, the monsters won't leave the Deadlands. If we can just get to the gate, we'll be safe. They might try to go after the spirits in the lake instead. But there's no time to worry or feel guilty about that now. The blue glow washes over Lysander's fur, over Merity's pale face. Her eyes flutter open, widening with horror at the sight of whatever's right behind me, whatever's breathing frost down my neck. Lysander jumps into the gate. Our hushed breaths fill the dark tunnel. Chapter 27. By the time we're through the gate, our feet steady on the cold, firm ground of our own world, Merity is herself again. Groggy and paler than usual, but not about to chase down any of the nearby squirrels or rabbits for an early meal. Swathed in gray pre-dawn light, we make our way straight to Abathel Castle's stables, not bothering to stop back in our rooms, leaving Lysander waiting at the entrance. His hired thugs all dead or wounded? We might have ruined Hadrian's plans for now, but we need to return to Grenwyr at once to learn what he's planning next and where he's hidden the king. If we still have a king, and he isn't already a monster. Taking a deep breath, I shove the thought to the back of my mind, where it'll have to stay for now. Buried, along with my grief for Master Simbri. The one person I need most right now, who can never again tell me what to do or rush to my aid. I'm on my own. I have to figure out a way to stop these attacks myself. And if I mess up, no one will swoop in to save me this time. I'm sorry you had to see me like that, Merity murmurs as she chooses a chestnut horse and slips into its stall. She spits. I can still taste his blood. I'm halfway through saddling a white horse when a shadow blocks the torchlight, forcing me to pause and turn. Baroness Abathel, in a long robe and slippers, stands at the stall door, watching me with a frown. She must have entered the row of stalls from the far side, as there's no way she could have marched past Lysander. There's no time to explain, I mutter as I tighten the horse's girth and adjust the stirrups. We'll pay you back for the horses when we're able.
Consider the horses another gift from the people of Elsinore, the Baroness says. You killed a shade for us, after all. No one in the castle will forget that any time soon. But are you sure you have to leave like this?
I blink at her.
Why not stay for a nice breakfast before you go on your way? The cooks will have it ready in just a few hours.
The Baroness's forced pleasantness reminds me of the day she took us on a tour of the surrounding valleys. Yesterday, I realize. Everything's a blur without sleep. Still, there's something off about the overly hospitable Baroness, and I doubt my feelings would change even after a long nap. Why don't you want us to leave? I demand as I ready my horse. But the Baroness is staring at Merity, and when she finally shifts her gaze to me, she looks just as stunned.
Is that blood on your faces, dears?
She stammers.
I can call a healer.
We're leaving, now, I grit out, touching the hilt of my sword. I'm willing to bet I look as feral as Merity did, with my bloodshot eyes and tangled hair. There aren't any more shades coming for your people right now, if that's what you're worried about. But there will be if you don't let us get back to Grenweir to find and stop a madman.
A madman? What?
Tell me why you don't want us to leave, I snap, cutting her off. The Baroness sucks in a breath and pales.
You'd better answer her,
Merity snarls, and Lysandre echoes her with a distant growl.
If you're interested in getting out of here in one piece, the bear is hungry.
The Baroness braces herself against the stall door, and the horse unsaddling whinnies happily. Baroness Abathel strokes the horse's soft nose with a trembling hand as she says quietly,
I was just following Prince Hadrian's orders. I can show you his letter. He asked me to keep you delayed and entertained in Abathel until he sent for you, and not to breathe a word about it to anyone, not even my guards.
She frowns as she gazes from me to Merity and back.
Has something happened? Is he in some kind of trouble?
You have no idea, Merity murmurs.
Am I in trouble too?
The Baroness glances between us, still pale.
Is this about the shade attacks?
Kind of. I push open the stall door, leading my horse into the wide aisle with Merity's. The Baroness makes no move to stop me. There's no time to explain now, but you're not in any immediate danger. We just need to hurry. Prince Hadrian... I swallow hard, the name sticking in my throat.
The prince urgently needs us back in Grenweir.
We received a raven in the dead of night ordering our return.
Safe journey, then,
Baroness Abathel says softly, looking uncertain, but like she'll be glad to see the back of Lysandre. As Merity and I ride out of Elsinore, back up the mountain path where charred remnants of our wagon still litter the ground, my eyes are on the grizzly, scouting the road ahead. But my thoughts are with Hadrian. I picture the bruise on his face where Vane punched him, and wish I could give him a few more bruises. Scenes of the Shade attacks in Elsinore. Attacks that Hadrian ordered. Flash mercilessly through my mind. Death and misery on the grandest scale I've ever seen. Then I remember the way his eyes lit up whenever he spotted me at the palace. The way he seemed so protective of Valoria and his younger siblings. The way he looked up to King Wilding as though he were Vaya, the five-faced god himself. Was it all an act? I've been so stupid, I mutter, mostly to myself, though Merity turns in her saddle to glance at me. I should have taken you at your word when you told me your suspicions in the wagon instead of trying to pick a fight with you. Merity narrows her eyes and says nothing, evidently lost in thought. But why all this murder? Why destroy his family? Why hurt the people of Cardia if he wants to rule them? And why hurt? I stop myself before I can add, me. Whatever I thought he felt for me, it must have been part of his grand illusion. I wonder if anyone can ever truly know another person, Meredy says softly, her eyes lingering on me as she trusts her horse to stick to the path. Or if we all keep a few rooms worth of secrets locked away in our minds. I'm tempted to ask what secrets Meredy keeps, but I'm too exhausted to hear them. I wonder if I'm keeping any of my own. Yet all thoughts seem to lead back to Hadrian, making me too sick to eat despite my stomach growling. We ride in silence for hours. You were right about something else, I say a while later as we descend the mountain. The late afternoon light makes our shadows leap and dance along the path ahead of us, like phantoms leading a parade of the living. I am selfish. Meredy halts her horse until mine catches up, frowning as she watches me. I took Master Simbri for granted. I thought she'd always be there to clean up my messes, like that was her job or something. Like she was untouchable. I take a breath. Just saying her name makes my whole body ache with the loss. I didn't even pay enough attention to you when you came to me for help with Firial. I should have taken time to warn you about what was happening in the Deadlands. And because I didn't, you nearly died. I dropped my gaze. I was hurt, and I forgot about everyone else who was hurting too. Simbri, and you, and Lyda, shut up. Meredy leans toward me in the saddle, tucking back a loose strand of my hair. You can't take on the blame for any deaths Hadrian caused. This was out of your control. Like you'd have me believe Firial's death was out of mine. I nod, choked by a sudden rush of tears. I flick the horse's reins and urge her to resume the steep downward walk. Meredy's fingers grazing my cheek as I drift away. My hands shake, reminding me of my potion withdrawal. But I don't want potions anymore. I don't want to be numb. I want to feel angry, want my blood to run so hot that when I find Hadrian, I can kill him without mourning yet another lost life. I want to grieve for my friends, so that their deaths will have meant something. Tears slide down my cheeks as I hold their faces in my mind. Evander, Nicanor, Simbri, the people of Elsinore, and perhaps even King Wilding, if we're too late. Please, by Vaya's grace, don't let us be too late. One day blurs into the next as we cross Grenwyr's lush farmland on our way back to Grenwyr City. Meredy forces us to stop for a few hours' rest, which I agree to only because I can't tell which end of my horse is the head. I wake up curled against Meredy's back, and we push our still-exhausted horses to gallop the rest of the way to the city. Early morning sunlight warms Meredy's hair, turning it from its usual deep purple red to a fiery shade. From behind, I could almost mistake her for Master Simbri, but when my horse draws level with hers, the scar on her cheek and the determined look in her eyes, even her smile, are all Meredy. Not Simbri, not Evander, just Meredy. You don't have to do this, you know, I murmur as we cross into the oddly quiet heart of Grenwyr City at last. This isn't your fight. Meredy smiles, a warrior's sharp smile. and I'm flooded with gratitude that I've got such a brave girl beside me.
But it is. I'm helping you get justice for Evander. Besides, this is every Carthian's fight now. I know I wasn't myself in the Deadlands after working my magic with Lysander. But I still heard most of what the masked necromancer said before he died. Hadrian has a lot to answer for.
Thank you. I clutched the horse's reins harder, resisting a sudden urge to reach for her, to steal a moment with her calming touch. I wonder if she knows how important she is to me. I want to tell her. But instead, what leaves my mouth as we crest another hill is, it feels like we've come a long way in just a few days. Merity opens her mouth, but as the palace comes into view, the determination in her eyes is swiftly replaced with fear. I follow her gaze, struggling to make sense of the scene unfolding on the grassy slope below the palace. It looks as though all of Grenwere City has gathered there, a sea of dark and light hair, scarves and dresses and fishermen's caps all blurring together. That explains why the city seemed so quiet. Above the people of Grenwere, closer to the palace, sits a metal cage large enough to hold 10 men or more. It's mostly covered by a sheet, but I glimpse a few pairs of boots and the bottom edges of the bars that form the cage. The sight makes my skin crawl. And beside the large cage, looking handsome as ever in a tailored green doublet as he gazes down at the crowd, is Hadrian. I'd know his saunter and blonde hair anywhere. Several men and women in archer's uniform stand behind him, holding bows. Merity, I say softly, I need you and Lysander to go find Valoria, Jax, and Simeon. Warn them about Hadrian if they don't already know. With shaking fingers, I unfasten Evander's sapphire pin from my tunic, the last piece of him I have to hold on to. And take this, for luck. Merity closes her fist around the pin. Her gaze softens, telling me the gift needs no explanation. Are you sure about Valoria? She sticks the pin gently below her Beastmaster's emeralds, blinking mist from her eyes. What if she's been helping Hadrian with whatever this is? She gestures to the distant crowd on the hill. I shake my head. There's no way. Of course, I would have said the same thing about Hadrian just 2 days ago. But be careful. Vaya knows I'm no great judge of character. After a pause, Merity says, and assuming I can trust her? Get her and the others out of the city, if they're willing, I murmur, wrapping Vane's blood-crusted cloak around my shoulders and pulling up the hood. Otherwise, make them hide somewhere for now. You and Lysander must join them. I check that my cloak is concealing my sword completely. Hadrian's only one man, even if he's a mad one. So I need to do this alone. Besides, I've got the perfect disguise. Merity's eyes widen as I put on Vane's silver mask. I'm sure I look like a nightmare. A nightmare who can barely see out of these tiny eye holes. I'll warn them, but then I'm coming right back for you, she says softly. And before you try to argue, I'll save you the trouble. You won't change my mind. Now tell me what you're going to do in that awful costume. It takes me a moment to form the words. I can't believe I'm about to say this, but then I can't see another way. I just know I've got to stop whatever's happening up on that hill. Kill Hadrian, I answer as I dismount from my horse. Odessa. Meredy slides off her horse's back and moves to my side, putting a hand on my arm. She doesn't tell me to be careful. She doesn't need to. The plea is there in her eyes, along with something else I can't name. You're nothing like I expected, I murmur from beneath the mask. It's already too warm against my skin. You're nothing like, well, him, Evander. Meredy purses her lips. Her expression is harder to read than ever as she pulls the mask from my face, running a finger along my jaw. Is that a bad thing? No, I insist, my mouth suddenly dry. What I meant is, I'm scared. More scared than I've ever been. But with her fingertips lingering on my cheek, even though I know what's waiting on that hill, I feel ready to fight. That makes two of us. She drops her hand to my shoulder. You unsettle me. Me? Not the madman on the hill? That earns a shaky smile from her. In one swift motion, she closes the space between us and kisses me, wrapping her arms around my neck. And I melt into it, parting her lips with my tongue. Her hands grip my waist, pulling me closer, and I slide my fingers through her silky hair. Maybe it's too soon, but it doesn't feel that way anymore. Not when she's so gentle and sure. She tastes of salt and a hint of strawberries, and I hunger for more. The way she muddles my thoughts with a single brush of her lips, making the whole mad world disappear and every part of me achingly, perfectly, wonderfully alive, is all the encouragement I need to survive. Up on the palace hill, a nervous murmur rises from the crowd, loud enough to startle us apart. Meredy puts a hand to her lips, and I shiver as I realize we're doing the one thing I swore I wouldn't do. Betraying Evander. This was a mistake, Meredy stammers as I slip my mask back on. Evander. Furial. Agreed, I choke out, to stop her from saying more. Hearing the other girl's name on Meredy's lips stings when it never has before. It's already forgotten. I don't want the last thing I ever see to be her guilt-stricken face. I don't want to wonder whether this would have happened if she'd come home when Evander was still alive. Heart thumping like crazy, I hurry toward the crowd on the hill and force myself not to look back. Chapter 28. As I weave through the sea of Carvians on the hill, jabbed by 100 elbows and coughed on by at least 3 people who probably have the black fever, I try not to think about that kiss. About the way she pulled off my mask. About the way she tasted. About her startled, this was a mistake, as she thought of Evander, or Furiel, or both. She's right, of course. But she's the one who started it. It was only a kiss. A really good kiss, but still. It didn't have to mean anything. By the time I break free of the crowd, I'm sweating under the blood-stained cloak. Thankfully, it's a blue so dark that the stains aren't obvious. But I'm painfully aware of where each patch of dry blood on the cloth brushes against me. What kept you, Vane? Hadrian asks, sounding far more irritable than I've ever heard him. He's paced a circle around the cage, worn his boot prints into the ground in his agitation.
I was starting to think something happened to you, and I was about to move forward without your particular brand of help.
He scowls.
I hate being kept waiting.
I move to his side, not saying a word, tucking my shaking hands into the folds of the cloak. He seems to be awaiting some sort of explanation. But if I make a single sound, my disguise is ruined.
Never mind, Hadrian sighs.
He takes a deep breath and seems to brighten.
You're here now. Let's get started.
He claps his hands together, his brown eyes shining with manic glee as he spins to face the crowd. I touch the hilt of Merity's borrowed dagger in a sheath on my belt. A faint ringing echoes in my ears as I realize how much I'm dreading this. Dreading the murder of this killer. A man whose darkness was buried so deep beneath a mask of sunshine, I could have kissed him and never tasted a hint of shadow. I start trying to pull out the dagger. A difficult task while keeping it hidden beneath my cloak. When a familiar face catches my eye. Lyda Crowther and several other nobles stand behind Hadrian's group of archers, all watching the restless crowd with solemn, almost bored expressions. Like they know exactly what's about to happen. But how could Lyda support Hadrian's twisted desire to make more shades, when she never fully recovered from seeing her husband become one?
Ladies and gentlemen of Grenmere City, Hadrian shouts in a booming voice, spreading his arms to the crowd and drawing my attention away from Lyda. Welcome. I, Prince Hadrian Wilding, have summoned you all here today for a demonstration of the greatest importance.
Softer to one of the guards, he snaps, "Drop the cover." As the sheet is whisked away from the cage, nearly everyone in the crowd gasps. Six shrouded dead are cowering inside, gags tied over their masks to muffle their shouts. Two of them wear tall, golden crowns set with 5 gems each, for Vaya's 5 beautiful sets of eyes. A glittering sapphire and emerald, a smoky quartz crystal, polished jasper, and turquoise. The king and queen.
Now listen up,
Hadrian yells to make himself heard over the shouts of the people. A few citizens tentatively step forward, and the guards take aim with their bows. Something tightens in my chest at the sight of Carthians facing senseless murder. But Hadrian holds up a hand to still the archer's volley.
Necromancers have been allowing the dead to rule over Carthia for far too long. Have you ever wondered why the dead have to be slain and brought back every few years? Why they have to wear those shrouds?
Hadrian pauses for effect.
It's all to keep them from turning into the monsters they are inside.
The crowd is nearly silent now. I clench my fists at my sides, shaking with a hatred I've never felt toward anyone but the shade that killed Evander. I don't know what Master Simbri would do right now, but since she can't give me a better plan, I'm going to shove my dagger so deep into Hadrian's chest that he collapses on the spot.
The dead become monsters because it's nature's way of telling us they should never be brought back to the land of the living.
Hadrian's eyes flash in triumph as he says it, though I don't see anyone in the crowd nodding in agreement.
The necromancer's magic is a dark magic, a corruption of the natural order. The dead belong in the Deadlands, and Carthia
belongs to the living.
Silence blankets the crowd. Many people's mouths hang open, while others turn away, heading back down the hill to their homes and their jobs.
You don't believe me, Hadrian shouts at them. Then allow me to show you the monsters that have been walking among us for far too long.
He nods to one of the guards, who removes the king's gag.
Hadrian, King Wilding says in a low voice.
It takes every ounce of control I have not to reveal myself. To run to the cage, to press my face against the bars and promise the king I'll get him out of this somehow. I fumble to get a grip on my dagger without anyone noticing.
Please don't do this,
the king continues in a shaky version of his usual rasp.
If you want me dead, if you really want me gone forever, then kill me in private. Burn my bones so my spirit has no home. But don't make me a shade right here. Not where I could hurt my people. Their lives matter far more than mine.
You don't care about their lives, Hadrian snarls. If you cared, you'd have stayed dead.
You think so?
The king says, anger warming his voice.
I thought you were smarter than this, Hadrian. But since you seem to need a reminder, I don't enjoy being run through with a sword every few years. I don't like being pulled from the peace of the Deadlands to this demanding, exhausting, messy life.
The king grips the bars of the cage with his gloved hands.
But I come back to Carthia because I have a duty to my people. No one knows them like I do. No one loves this land like I do. You think you can rule better than me after a mere 18 years in the world?
As the king and Hadrian growl at each other, I finally pull my dagger free of its sheath. It's hard to tell through the narrow slits of my mask whether anyone spotted me. But no one's coming after me, so I think I'm safe. I make my way to Hadrian's side, steeling myself for what I'm about to do. The time for questions is over. I don't want to hear another word from him. He's not the prince I thought he was. Hadrian turns his back on the king and shouts something else to the crowd. I'm too focused on moving with him to pick out the words. I keep close to his side, with just enough room to hold the blade between us. As I'm about to thrust the dagger into his ribs, a guard pushes me out of the way. I stumble back a few paces, winding up beside the cage.
See the monster who was making your laws and watching over you?
Hadrian thunders.
Hadrian, no!
The king cries. Two more guards reach between the bars, ripping off the king's shroud. For a moment, I can see a faint impression of the handsome warrior King Wilding was in life. Though he's shrunken in stature. Though his shaggy dark hair is brittle and his skin is waxy, pulled tightly over his too thin face and limbs, his brown eyes are as bright and alive as Hadrian's. Then the change begins. His mouth grows wider, his teeth sharpening. His bright eyes shrink back into his skull until they're nothing but sightless black pits. His remaining flesh seems to wither before me, turning gray and stretching even tighter over a skeletal frame that grows taller, wider, suggesting great strength. He throws back his head and howls, scratching the cage floor with his bony fingers, and it's all I can do to stay standing. His eternal reign is over. The other dead in the cage writhe, either in pain or fear. I can't be sure. I drop my gaze, sickened by the monster wearing the king's crown. The cries rippling through the crowd make what I've just witnessed seem even worse. "The king loved his people, Prince Adrian," a merchant shouts from near the front of the crowd. "He fed soup to the poor and brought gifts to new mothers and wrote poems for the harvest festival. How could you do this to him? To us?" It's everything I wish I could say. Instead, I press my lips together to keep from screaming and concentrate on getting close to Adrian again. I don't want the guards to see the knife slide into his ribs until it's too late for anyone to stop me or a healer to intervene. If I can attack soon, there's still a chance I can save the queen. The caged shade howls, then crunches down on something. Many people scream. The king monster must be feeding on the other dead trapped in there with it. "Remove the rest of their shrouds," Hadrian calls to one of the guards, "and start passing out torches to the living." Raising his voice, he shouts at the retreating crowd. "You see? That monster was your king. This is what the dead all become, if given the chance. But we can fight them, my friends, together. With me on the throne, a living king. We'll close death's convents and forbid anyone else from becoming a necromancer. We'll reopen the temples of change and finally thrive." There are too many guards at Hadrian's side now. For the moment, I'm forced to clutch my dagger and glare at him from several paces away.
"We'll fight them with fire," a woman calls from somewhere behind me.
"Lyda,
take a torch and pass the rest along. The guards will help you light them. You see, the living are more powerful than the dead."
Her words are like a blow to the stomach, sending a wave of nausea through me. I wonder if Evander's mother knows that by supporting Hadrian's insanity, she helped to murder her own son. I really don't want to hear the answer. If I make it out of this, I never want to see her again.
"Take a torch! Hurry!" Hadrian shouts.
The crowd has stopped retreating, many of them staring at the shade wearing the king's crown as it presses against the bars of the cage, straining to get free.
"We can burn these monsters out of existence and take back our city. All you have to do is listen to me."
Hadrian's teeth are stark white against his tan skin.
"We can get rid of all the dead before they become shades and hurt those we love. It's time to take Arthia back from the cold hands of the dead."
"Why should we trust you?"
yells a girl no older than 9. She clutches 3 dolls made of gray rags like their weapons.
"King Wilding was my friend."
"King Wilding let your friends and neighbors die of the black fever," Hadrian retorts, his eyes flashing. "I tried working on a cure once, and you know what your monster of a king did? Threw all my research away. Burned it. Years of studying and perfecting a life-saving potion. All gone."
His voice breaks as he shouts.
"The dead hold us back with their fears. My sister Valoria has created inventions. Inventions that could make Carthia a better and safer place to live. Yet she's forced to hide them because of the laws of people whose time in Carthia should have ended long ago."
I've made it to Hadrian's side again. No one is in my way. No one is stopping me from doing what I need to do. I can't bear to look behind me at what's in the cage.
I just need to act. Now.
Goodbye, Hadrian, I whisper as I jab the dagger toward him. With a cry, he leaps aside as the blade nicks